I think it's a lot to do with social pressures. I think it's a lot to do with pride. I think it's a lot to do with shame.
Yeah.
And I think that people, including ourselves, you don't want to fail at this, because if you fail at this, it is your fault and you have failed at life.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Still Parents podcast, supported by Global's Make Some Noise. On this episode, we are joined once again, and we're very happy to have him back, by Andy Horsley. Andy first came on for a mini episode for Baby Loss Awareness Week. The link for that episode is in the description for this. I'm talking about self-care, which was the theme of the week, and how the communities in online gaming in particular, which was fascinating to hear about, have and continue to help Andy mentally. Andy, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good.
So it was a few months ago that we first saw you. And when you walked into the studio tonight, I couldn't remember if you even had that beard, because that's a great beard. Was it shorter?
I think it probably was shorter. Like I said earlier, right. I can't do it myself anymore, because it's a bit of a beast. And
I'm very jealous.
Yeah, proper beard. The old razor doesn't go to the right setting. Yeah. I'm basically lazy, so I have to go to the barber to get it done.
Yeah, I do the same, even though my beard is considerably less majestic than yours. But my excuse is it's just cool to kind of like sit down and chill for a few minutes. And sitting there. Yeah, although every time I walk in, I do feel a bit of a charlatan, because I'm walking in as a bold man, and I often see the people that are sat there in the waiting queue going,
he's got his head on the wrong way around.
What's he doing here?
What's this idiot doing in here? So yes. Also, and this will be linked in the description, because we spoke to you before on that mini episode, which is something we'd never really delved into before. And I'm, you know, game myself over the years, not as much now. I'm middle-aged and got the kids taking up the TV all the time. But, you know, I was quite into it. It was talking about the world of online gaming and how that has really helped you and the communities around it, and the importance of the differences between being able to see someone physically and one thing that really stood out was when you mentioned about some nights when you weren't able to sleep and you could just wake up and log in because you knew that there would be people that would be
there. How would he wake up if he wasn't able to sleep?
Is that what I said?
Yeah. So very good shout.
That
is,
yeah, well noticed.
Yeah, yeah. I have no comeback for that. Andy Horsley, you and your wife Olivia, how long have you guys been married?
2018.
Okay.
So good.
And how long have you, when did you first meet?
2011.
Okay.
We got together in 2011.
Yeah. All right. How did you meet? I always have to ask
uni.
This. Yeah. A lot of the guests we've had, a lot of people meet at uni, don't they?
Yeah, well, we got lucky because we, geographically, we lived close anyway.
Okay.
She's from Carver, I'm from Leamington. So.
All right.
And we went to uni in Worcester. So.
Were you on the same course?
I did teaching. I did a teaching course and Liv did social welfare. So different course, but we lived in the same halls. Didn't know we lived in the same halls. There were only three floors to these halls. And for the whole year, we didn't meet. And even though there's all these people, and I knew
funny how things work out,
because they were dickheads. They we went round, like, we were really sociable in our halls. We went round to loads of different halls. There were six in total. Went to five different halls and said, "Do you want to come out? Freshers' week. Do you want to come out? Do you want to come out?" So everyone gathered together in one hall to go out. Went up to Liv's hall, and I was like, "Do you want to come out?" And I can't remember who it was at the front. They were Nah, we're all right. So for a whole year after that point, we just thought they were the dickheads who were bouncing basketballs and lobbing custard creams into our window because they were at the top.
Yeah.
Which you'll love telling the story of.
But, that's great.
Yeah, and for a whole year we didn't meet, and then it got to May, I think it was, and I was wingmanning for a mate.
He
was trying to get with this other girl who already had a boyfriend.
So you were goose.
Weird situation.
Yeah. You were the goose.
Yeah, and then turns out this girl had another mate who was really hot, and that was Liv, so I ended up trying to get with Liv and it worked out.
I was about to ask who approached who, but I get the impression it was...
Yeah, I mean, I was very inebriated, but yes. I approached Liv, yeah.
Remember the first thing you said to her?
Nope. No, not at all. Yeah. So I told this story at the wedding and I think parents and stuff couldn't really believe it, but the first thing that I do remember was getting off with her outside the toilet. That was getting off at the time.
Getting off
with someone, making out, whatever you want to call it.
But, that's American making out. Getting off was English.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't remember much about it. I remember her then having to go because her mate was being ill and all the rest of it. But yeah, it was a very loving, romantic story.
It sounds like it. You don't remember a word you said.
No. After it, but it worked.
I asked that for a reason, because quite often I realised that a lot of people can't remember the first thing that they ever said to their future partner, their future husband or wife.
I don't think I could.
That's my hair.
I was drunk.
Yeah, you was in snobs, weren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
I remember Matt, because he mentioned
popping
it
on the dance floor.
Yeah, he goes, I saw her, I was on the dance floor, so I went over and I put my face on.
I wish she went over like the in-betweeners dance.
Let's get into your story. So you and Liv, you have sort of multiple miscarriages, haven't you? But you and since then you've gone on to have the birth of your son called, it's a great name.
Ezra.
Ezra. How did you land on the name Ezra?
You threw him under the bus there, Dan.
It was obviously Liv's idea, fully Liv's idea, yeah. No.
Nothing to do with George Ezra?
I'm a massive geek. No, nothing to do with George Ezra. And if people refer to that, it pisses me.
Oh, did you get that a lot?
No, Ezra is a Star Wars Jedi in one of the animated series called Star Wars Rebels.
Wow.
Which is one of my favourite series, so yeah. He is the main Jedi in that.
I love Star Wars. I grew up on Star Wars. I don't remember Ezra. So it's the animated...
The animated one, yeah. He's called Ezra Bridger.
Does Liv know that your son is named after a Star Wars character?
She does now, yeah. And she'll be listening. I think she's listening live right now.
She thinking, definitely knows
she'll
now.
She'll be thinking, no, it was my idea. I like the name Ezra. it's good.
It was 2021, is that right, when you had two miscarriages, both within... So as we say with all of our guests, this is the part of the show where we'd like you to share your story with everyone, especially people listening who will be having gone through or maybe going through a very similar story to what you and Liv have. Mm-hmm. Were you actively trying for children before the first pregnancy? Was that, you know?
Yeah, we were. We wanted to sort of take our time at first. We weren't in a hurry. You know, the classic modern thing, I guess, of being a bit older when you have kids, I guess.
Yeah.
Not chasing.
How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 34.
34, okay.
So, and my wife's 32, so.
Okay. Youngster.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really feel like that anymore. But thank you.
You don't when you're 34, but then when you get to like closer to 50, you'll be like, bloody hell, 34, I'm still a baby.
Yeah.
I wish I was still in my 30s, yeah.
But yeah, we were trying, actively trying. And I honestly, like, a lot of what I will, I assume, talk about tonight is repressed memories. So it's quite hard to genuinely remember lot of the stuff, which sounds a bit shit when you come in on a podcast to talk about it. So I apologise in advance. But it is stuff that I have repressed. I think in a good way now.
That's understandable.
I think sort of processed it, accepted it, talked to Ryan about it. And family and friends, obviously. So we were trying for a long time. Got pregnant, or rather Liv got pregnant. And I think we felt the pressures of that inadvertently without realising.
In what way?
I think Liv especially, probably social media more than anything, and friends and family, and just nothing...
Social pressures,
nothing intentional, just societal pressures, things that accumulate over time, stigmas that you build up in your head, assumptions that you make, and you start to build this journey of what this child's going to be, and the path that they're going to go on, and what they be when they grow up, and we were careful, we intentionally didn't name... You know, the child, because for us that was scary.
Okay.
We didn't want to name the child too. I know lots of people do.
Yeah.
But we didn't want to name the child because we felt like we were jinxing it, you know.
Okay. Are you quite superstitious?
No, not at all. But when it comes to a life, we didn't want to risk it, you know.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so pregnancy was filled with complications, and as was the second one. And one of them ended up in surgery to remove the baby, which was really tough, really horrible, especially for Liv, having to go through that physically and mentally, and having to recover from that in both senses.
If you don't mind me asking, what stage, how many weeks was, can you remember?
I think 14, can't remember.
Yeah.
Repressed memories.
Sorry.
So maybe
it reminds me of something you brought up in your epic, because I love the phrase, it stuck with me, thought tunnels.
Yeah. I remember a specific preparatory thought on it that I had, or multiple, I guess, about miscarriage, because when you're a deep thinker, I guess probably when you're a bloke as well, I guess lots of blokes probably do this. You just deep think everything, you overthink everything, you plan ahead to the point where things can't surprise you. And that's what, it's exactly what these thought tunnels were. The problem with my thought tunnel was that they were degenerative and to the point where someone or something would happen that was really bad. Someone would die, something would explode. And when you think about things in such deep detail, it feels real. And you know, there's loads of research about that. You know, you think about if you're at Everest, you think about it, and your body temperature drops. If you think about it, you're on the beach and you're
so mad, isn't it?
It's crazy. But that's essentially what it was, right? You think about it, and your brain panics, and your heart pressure, your blood pressure changes, your heartbeat changes. Anyway, so I had this thought tunnel about miscarriage and all these other worries, like Liv passing away in pregnancy, which is a horrible thing to think about, and sorry to bring it up for anyone who might be affected, but that those things kept crossing my mind, and among many other things. So I played this out in my head about potentially losing the baby, and this was the first miscarriage.
Yeah.
So when it happened, and we found out that it happened, this was obviously before the surgery. It was tough. But it was more tough seeing Liv process it. I was quite numb to it. I wasn't actually emotional at the time. Mm. And I think it's because I'd played this scenario in my head so many times, it was almost like I'd experienced it. Wow. And it was now happening for the first time in reality, and I don't think I'd processed that it was real, because I was trying to sort of pretend that it wasn't, right? I remember there was one specific moment where I rang up our parents to tell them. So I rang up Liv's parents and I rang up my parents, and that was the moment. That was the moment where I thought, holy shit, we've just lost a baby, we've just lost a life. And it all came down, the emotions came out, the tears came out. So yeah, that was... that's tough reliving that, because I haven't done that in a while. So.
Well done.
Yeah,
I suppose this is a fairly personal question, and answer it however you want to, of course, but before you went through your losses... Mm. Did your mind work that way anyway? I know you said about the thought tunnels and things like that, right? But have you had that overactive mind like all through your life?
I've had it since I was a kid. I don't know what triggered it. I remember it from being as young. I used to play rugby. I used to love rugby, I was quite good at it at one point. And I used to be really paranoid because you'd get scouts that would come to your game and watch you. And I used to be really paranoid about what they would think and how I was playing, and paranoid, and it would build up. And I used to have dreams about it. And I remember this one recurring nightmare that I would have when I was about 13, 14, 15, something like that, where I'd be doing anything and then suddenly I'd be playing rugby and all these eyes would start appearing in this night. And it turned out to be paranoia, right? I think from there it was like, to protect myself from these nightmares, I would play out every scenario. It sounds like a really silly thing to do, but my mum and dad might be listening to this. I don't know. It's not, is it?
Like a self-protection thing.
Yeah, it's exactly that. I used to be so superstitious, and I'd be flicking light switches on and off a certain number of times so that something bad didn't happen. Or if I thought about something bad happening, I would have to say that will never happen 3 times out loud for it not to happen. Like, this sounds really fucked up.
No, it's not. Do you know what?
There'll be so many people right now going,
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Mine was magpies.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, my word. If I ever saw one magpie by itself, I'd be scouting around looking everywhere for another magpie. Or I would have to say, morning, Mr. Magpie, how's the wife?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I'd say all the time.
Is that because of the...
Because that was...
The rhyme, isn't it?
That was the rhyme. But then if I saw two magpies, brilliant. You know, because two for joy. One for sorrow, two for joy. Yeah. So I used to be really, really bad with magpies. Funnily enough, they don't bother me now. I often wonder whether I was like that, because I had when I was a little bit younger, I can't remember how old I was, my mum would probably tell me, I vaguely remember doing something at school based around germs, and I became obsessive compulsive with washing my hands.
Okay.
So I constantly wash my hands, or to the extent where I'd blow my knife and fork before I ate, because I was blowing the germs off or something like that. And I do think sometimes if you've maybe grown up with something which has formed your own self-opinion of what might or might not happen,
yeah.
based on what you see or what you do, I'm not surprised that maybe you felt the way that you did, where you're effectively living out your worst nightmare.
Yeah.
Even though the chances of that worst nightmare happening are so slim, yeah, you've almost convinced yourself that that is going to happen.
Yeah. As Matt said, it became a self-defense mechanism. The more that I thought about these things happening, the more I felt comfortable that I'd crossed that barrier. I'd experienced it in my head and I was prepared for it. And it wasn't for much for my own self-preservation. It was more for the ones that I cared for.
To be honest, though, as well, Andy, like growing up and what you said about, like, what you with the germ stuff, mm, things like that, there just wasn't as much information about all of this as well. So, like,
yeah, true.
It was almost like there was kids at school. I remember very, very clearly really struggling with school, and in general, they were just called weird or something like that, right? But they weren't. They were just, looking back now, and now we know more. It was just they were struggling.
And, when you're a kid, it's pure, all the kids are cruel, aren't they?
Of course, yeah, absolutely. And so, but I suppose that's where education comes into play. And you doing this kind of thing with us is going to be educating people as well.
Hopefully. I think also perhaps, it's, you know, when you have a behaviour that the repetition element to it, so it almost becomes part of a comfort, you know, almost the eye of your storm. Everything else is going on around, but that's there. And do we, I mean, this is a question for everyone, have a natural inclination to, say, with these thoughts, or anyone who's like a deep thinker and you go down with these routes, always kind of come back to the potential worst case scenario. And it comes from that. And then lots of people refer to, and I'm not sure how much I believe, I think there's element, I'm not sure this, there's a lot of people using it on this phrase, manifesting, isn't it, on social media these days. But I think the old school way of saying it is law of attraction, isn't it?
It's a really weird contradiction with my thought tunnels, because I am not superstitious, not anymore. And I never thought I was, even with the light switches and all the rest of it.
Because you said, interesting, because you did say, after you said you weren't superstitious, but then in that, but I'm not sure if you caught yourself saying it, you went, I was quite superstitious when I was younger.
At the time. At the time, I used to drive my parents mad. Like, flicking light switches. I don't know. Like, what are you doing?
How much electricity?
I wouldn't tell anyone. Yeah. Well, I'm just turning lights off.
Because to you, it was the norm.
Yeah. I mean, I knew it was a bit weird. The whole lights turning on and off three times and saying, I knew it was a bit weird, but who do you talk to about something like that?
As far as
I was concerned, and like Matt saying, back in school, I was normal kid.
You know, I think good everyone time has it to a degree.
Everyone has their inner demons. Everyone has something that.
Absolutely.
My similar version was it had to be an even number. So if I did something, it couldn't be one or three or five. Even if I was like, you know, when you're at school and someone's got the sweets from the tuck shop and they're like, give me one, I'm like, oh, I can have two. And I didn't want to tell him it's because I needed an even number.
Or the volume on the TV.
I was just about.
I'm like that now.
It has to be an even number.
And if it's 13, you're fucked.
Yeah.
You've been watching something on 13, you don't realise for an hour. That's it. You're
bang on. Yeah. I'm exactly the same.
That's true.
I'm exactly the same.
Yeah. It's quite weird, isn't it?
It is bizarre. You know, you see sports people who...
Look at Rafa Nadal in tennis any time before he serves. It takes him about fucking a minute to do it.
Yeah, and then you see some footballers who come onto the pitch and they'll do, I don't know, like a couple of hops and they'll touch the floor or whatever.
Or before a penalty.
Something that people would do.
Absolutely.
I think everybody has their own little thing, don't they? They have their own little...
I have to put my right foot on, my right shoe on before my left.
Going back to your question there, though, about
law of attraction.
Yeah. Is, you know, you hear of these people, I mean, you see it a lot in the news, or there's been, there's been films, you know, the film Catch Me If You Can, where people lie and lie and lie, and they believe so much of their own thoughts that they can almost live this complete and utter second life away from their actual life, and they believe so much in it.
But they say a lie told enough times becomes the truth, isn't it? Isn't that a proverb or something?
Right. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So when you've gone through that first loss then, is this making your mind worse from that point?
So after that, going back to... Yeah, 100%.
I was running, just adds onto it.
And... Yeah, I was running a mile a minute. I was worried about live 24/7.
Everything. Yeah.
Constantly. A lot of the memories are like repressed out of self-defense, as I said, and I explored a lot of them with Ryan and the support of Lee May, absolutely, but they're still repressed. I've processed them, I've accepted them, I am who I am, and I'm comfortable with that now, and that's great. But I still don't want to think about it. Why do I want to drag it up? I'm happy talking about it, but why do I want to drag it up on a regular basis? It's, there was something that someone said, something like, how do I fill this void? How do I fill the hole or whatever it is? Something that someone said online. And I just said, you don't. The hole just gets a little bit smaller over time. The void just gets a little bit smaller over time. You learn to compensate and fill things a little bit. And it sounds like a coping thing, and sometimes it is, but it's just a process. You learn eventually to move on. There's a couple of people have asked me about whether or not Ezra has really helped, and Ezra has obviously massively helped. Ezra's brilliant. He's fantastic. He's such a cheeky little chappy, and he's brought so much love to our lives.
Ezra was born in 2023.
Late 2023, October. So. And he's absolutely fantastic, obviously, and we're very blessed to have him.
Yeah.
But there's always that feeling of what ifs. He could have had siblings, and then Ezra probably wouldn't have been Ezra at that time. You know, it would have been
a different
child, I'm sure. But you play those scenarios out and you think, what have we missed? What have we missed out on? What time have we lost? We're not getting any younger. All those kinds of things. But you learn to accept it. And I don't even know what I was saying. I just rambled.
No, it's part of the journey. It's all part of the journey, though. It is.
Yeah.
It is.
This was, so you had a further miscarriage after the one which you've spoke to us about, but with, and we'll speak on that in a moment, because as you mentioned Ezra, and there was complications, and obviously you've gone through, as we've mentioned so many times, we guess, on this podcast, the naivety is gone, and then you're just in a state of worry throughout the pregnancies, but you know, how's your wife coping? Is this going to happen again, especially with you and the way that you're processing things, these thought tunnels, etc. And there's no way that you can find comfort or appreciate or enjoy.
Yeah.
And there was concerns during that pregnancy. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, so the pregnancy was wrought with complications. At 14 weeks, again, Liv had a really heavy bleed. And we were just like, okay, well, that's it then. We're fucked again. We're going down the same path.
You thought that's, yeah.
And I didn't at the time. I didn't say that to obviously at the time. I was positive as I could, so it could be okay, well, let's go to hospital. I'm sure everything's fine. Deep down you're thinking,
you're mentally preparing yourself for another, right?
I'm trying to think of ways that I can support Liv. And we get to hospital, and as brilliant as every hospital worker, nurse, doctor, whatever has been throughout the miscarriages and the pregnancy and the birth, there were times where they were shit with the whole process of miscarriages. And one of them was one of the nurses, lovely nurse, but she can't really remember if she knew a bit about our background at the time or whether we told her there and then that we'd had miscarriages before. Yeah. But basically, we described the bleed to her when we got there. We had to drive ourselves because the ambulance took 45 minutes and still wasn't anywhere to be seen, so we had to drive ourselves.
Which hospital was it?
We went to Warwick in the end, I think, for this one. Got there, described it to the nurse, and I can't remember the exact phrase that the nurse said, but she basically said, oh, okay, so it looks like you're having another miscarriage.
It's nice of her.
Which is, you know, it was probably the case, right? But it wasn't the case. And
that's why you don't say things until you know what the... what's actually going on.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you can surmise all you like on what somebody's going through, or this might be, sounds like you're having another miscarriage. You know, doesn't mean just because you've got a little bit of chest pain that you're having a heart attack.
It's the throwaway nature of the comment.
That to me, that's not right. That doesn't sit right with me that a medical professional should be saying that, because medical professionals go into their profession because they want to care for people, they want to help people.
Yeah. I remember what it was. Sorry, it wasn't those words. I remember exactly what it was. Liv was on progesterone. So as part of, we were supported through Professor Quemby and the CIRM trial. As part of that, to retain the pregnancy, Liv was on progesterone.
Yeah.
To make sure that her body knew to keep the baby.
Right.
Rather than think that it was a period or whatever to get rid of it. So, so Liv was due to take her progesterone at the hospital,
right,
or was late for taking it, and said to the nurse, I need to take my progesterone. Shall I take it? And the nurse went, no, I don't think there's any point. So she didn't say, no, it's in the miscarriage, but obviously you join the dots and you think, well, okay. And in the end, she did take it, and it's a bloody good job she did. Yeah, that was tricky.
That's worse than the first comment.
It is, I actually agree.
To be honest with you, Like, I was going to swear then, but we don't swear.
But it's a throw, to throw away. I mean, like that, that to her is probably just a throwaway comment.
And it might have been to her, in fairness, the
from where maybe, she's sitting.
Yeah,
like,
maybe 99% of the times, or in all of her experience, she was an old vet by the sounds of it.
Yeah,
but maybe in all of her experience, that's been the case. But in this case, it wasn't. And, and we felt there was a bit of an injustice there, and we were preparing for another miscarriage. Turns out it was a hematoma, a blood clot that had then, like a massive blood clot that had then burst, and it was a massive bleed. And thankfully, Ezra was great, and we had lots of scans and scares after that fact. But that was the biggest scary moment, and we were told that we were going to lose the baby. So yeah, it was tough.
Was it again going back to what I asked you with the first one, if you don't mind? Was it a decision that immediately that between you and Liv that okay, let's try again? How were you processing it in terms of your relationship and mentally?
We took on a point of anger, both of us, of proving the universe, whatever you want to call it, proving the world wrong, that we deserve this second, we deserve this child. We were within our right to have this child. And after the first miscarriage, it was awful. We processed it. We had support, obviously, but we picked ourselves up and we tried again, and we had to try for quite a while for the second one from memory.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously it happened again, and that's when you think, you know, you have one miscarriage and you think, this sucks. I wasn't prepared for it. No one talks about it. Oh my God, everything's the worst thing.
It's overlooked, isn't it? We've discussed it on this podcast.
It's so important. You've come on. Honestly, I'm telling you, and it really is, because like this is one of the areas that since I've come on board with the podcast and working for the charity full time, and the people that I talk to outside of my job and stuff, like the miscarriage is like, it's getting better, no question, right? But it goes so far under the radar.
I don't understand it. I don't get it.
No,
because it's a loss of a life. I do not understand.
And we've said it so many times. Yeah. It just frustrates me.
It's one of those things, and in your frustration, you start to compare, and you're jealous, and you get so angry with everything in life. Nothing is fair.
Yes.
The concept of fair, what have I done to deserve this? I haven't. It just happened. But you go through all these processes. Everyone talks about this illness and that illness and cancer. Cancer is obviously horrible. It's horrendous. But everyone talks about it.
Mm.
And they should talk about it. Absolutely. Mm. We should talk about it. And we should do what we can to try to cure it, or do what we can for it, right?
Absolutely.
No one does that for miscarriage or similar.
Mm.
Why? It's almost like there's this stigma. I think it's a lot to do with social pressures. I think it's a lot to do with pride. I think it's a lot to do with shame.
Yeah,
and I think that people, including ourselves, you don't want to fail at this, because if you fail at this, it is your fault and you have failed at life. If you get cancer, depending on the cancer that you get, and without going too far down that rabbit hole, it's not your fault.
Mm, no, sorry,
right? Man.
Yeah.
If you have a miscarriage, what did we do? Did I fall over? Did I drink too much before I knew that I was pregnant?
That's a great point, you know.
Yeah, it's a really good point.
Did I not eat the right things?
And there is that with the mothers, isn't there? I mean, the word you used was failure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I mean, we've been through miscarriages ourselves, and I know, I don't think Amy ever explicitly said that she felt like a failure, but I think from experience and speaking to lots of other women, is that I do believe that is a strong thing that women feel, is that they've failed or that their body has failed that baby or that child, you know, that child. And ultimately they haven't, because there's a reason why that miscarriage has happened.
Yeah.
It might be genetic, it could be, you know, there's lots of different reasons, isn't there? But the first thing you do is you go and you blame yourself, don't you? Mm. You blame yourself. And as men, doesn't matter what we say, what we do, you can't take that away from them, because that's how they feel.
Yeah, well, I'm a fixer. I've always been a fixer. And if I can't fix something, it frustrates the hell out of me in terms of people. You know, I'm a people fixer and I always want to help other people. That sounds really all around.
No.
But that's just the way I operate. And when you can't do that, because it's completely out of your control, and it's something you don't understand, and it's something that a lot of other people don't understand. We still don't understand miscarriage in the grand scheme of things. No. So many things are not understood. Professor Quemby was amazing, and she is like a pioneer in her field, which is fantastic. But there is so much confusion still about miscarriage, and not enough money put into it, not enough priority. And yet one in three, one in four, I think, people are affected, well, like go through miscarriage or are affected by miscarriage.
Crazy,
it's nuts.
Yeah.
How is, you're sat around a table. I did this at work. I did talk about it at work, which was very impromptu. I can get onto it if you like. But
yeah.
We went to this this conference meeting, which was a safety day. One of my colleagues was running this safety day, and there were 90 odd, maybe 100 people, I'm not sure, there from our team, our wider team.
Yeah.
And it was all about, obviously, workplace safety and what you can do to make sure you're safe and all the rest of it. And there was one moment of, it was about a 15-minute, 20-minute section on mental health, first aid. Mental health, which was brilliant. And they're really building the profile of mental health at National Grid. And there's mental health first aiders, and they do courses and all this, so it's fantastic. Mm. So they did a segment on mental health, but it was very, and this is not the fault of the organizer at all, I think it's because she was just broaching the subject, but it was very surface level.
Right.
And I felt...
Was it like, do you feel almost as if it was like a box ticker, like for the company angle?
I don't know.
We'll say it, but we're not going to get into it.
It was a room full of blokes. I think 90% of the room, 95% of the room is a room full of blokes.
Yes.
And that's a hard audience to address in terms of mental health. And what do you talk about? And I can't even remember what the surface level, it felt like surface level to me, that might be unfair. But it felt like I'm a very deep person compared to a lot of people when it comes to mental health, so maybe that's unfair. So she or whoever it was did this talk about mental health, and throughout the rest of the session, the conference, whatever you want to call it, I had this burning desire, and it was burning, compelling desire. Yeah. I don't know where it came from. I'm not normally this... spontaneous, I guess, in a sense. Maybe some people disagree, but I had this compelling desire to want to go up to the front and talk about what had happened.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know whether it was appropriate. And then I just wrote this. And this is just literally a scatterbrain of notes, of literal words on a page.
Brilliant. So, yeah, and he's brought their notes with us. If you want to... share some of these, because I think that because when it is the spontaneity, because that is your true
self,
and you see, coming across, you're very self aware, aren't you? Like how your emotions, how you're feeling, and how you process the thoughts, and obviously the environment that we're in tonight might bring out that as well. But I think again, like we said, the amount of people, because imagine how many other occasions someone's been sat in a room and they might have had the opportunity to do something similar, but it's a gut feeling, isn't it? And it's just
I just felt like there were so many blokes. I felt like there were so many blokes in the room, and I knew a couple of people were really struggling with something and didn't. They didn't know that they could talk to people about it. They knew there were mental health first aiders out there, and that's really good. But I felt like I needed to talk about it. So what I did for the rest of the conference, which my boss will be really pleased to hear when he listens to this, was because I couldn't think of anything else, basically scatter down all these notes.
Okay,
and I went over to the lady who was organising it, and I just said, look, at the end of the conference, can I just go up for 5 minutes and talk about something to do with mental health first aid? And she knew my situation. She's in my team.
That's
she
brilliant.
Knew what happened. And I went up, and it turned out to be half an hour. And I just talked to people about Mind & Live's experience and how it was like the process that went through with Lily May and referenced Lily May. And I said about, we were sat around in tables of eight. And I said, there are eight people on your table, and odds are that two of you, not necessarily their table, but two of you are going through or have been through miscarriage, suffering to do with baby
loss. I bet that got their attention because it just makes it real, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's with those stats that
you literally
spoke about.
It was almost like watching The Traitors. You know, you literally saw people straight afterwards, like looking around like,
that's a great show.
Great program, by the way.
We love it. So I think there's not many moments in my life that I'm genuinely proud of. And I think... this sounds like I'm tooting my own horn, but it was something that I was really chuffed that I did after the fact. And I got teary, and I spoke too quickly, and I didn't take a breath when I needed to. Probably like I've done a bit tonight, you know, you get really nervous, but it was from the heart.
Yeah, so. And that's the most, that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
The moment, the presence of it, and you were there. How did you feel? Did you feel the room reacting to you? Could you tell that they... You know, with the engagement level.
They were there. I'm generally speaking a bit younger than a lot of the people who work there, I think. Sure, that's not going to happen very long as I'm getting older and older, but you could just tell that people had either been through it or experienced it or been close to someone who had experienced. And I didn't just talk about miscarriage and exclusively miscarriage. It was more about loss and processing loss and blokes not talking about it, just bravadoing it, going down the pub and brushing it over, because typically that's what blokes do. And you could see blokes around the room going nodding like, shit, that's what I do. I don't process it at all.
Nailed it.
And if it works for them, well, it works for them. But at some point, for me, at some point, something's got to give. And yeah. For me, it was obviously a miscarriage. For many other people, it could be lots of other things. So, and yeah, people coming up to me, talking to me afterwards, and I've had quite a few colleagues afterwards saying, I'd like to talk to you about this. Is that okay? And you take them through the normal mental health first aid thing. Quite a few colleagues. It's just been really nice to give something back in that small space. Mm. You know, it's not.
And there's nothing wrong with feeling proud of that you know, of doing that, and not like questioning, oh, did I talk too fast? And this, that, and the other. Like, that's just owning it. And I think it's because it's clearly helped other people in the room.
Hopefully.
And yourself.
Yeah.
You know. Because it's the cathartic nature of being able to open up in that way. I'm dying to find out some of the notes you put down.
Yeah. It's scattered. There's like 27 different bullet points. What did I say?
Number four.
Miscarriages, tons of hospital appointments, social media, babies. Social media is a huge one. Social media used to piss us off because we would be on social media every night like everyone else, and if you're in a good state of mind, that's fine. You're just swiping through, you're looking at pictures. Oh, what's so-and-so been up to? What facade are they putting on today?
I hate social media for that reason.
Well, as long as you're in the mindset to say, this is fake, but it's okay, I can see it. This is fake.
Everything's great. Okay. All the time.
Fine. But when you've gone through that something like this, or a loss like this, or a miscarriage like this, and especially for Liv being a female, and generally speaking, women tend to post more on social media. She has more women on her Facebook, mm-hmm. on her Instagram. All she was seeing was babies, and it was like every reel, every swipe was baby, look at how amazing my babies. And that's fantastic, your baby is amazing, you should post about it if you want to, but for someone who's been through this,
she was
swiping through and she was pissed off, and I was pissed off. I was like, where's the truth bits in these? And then, like, not to say that everyone has to share their dooms and glooms, but where is it? Where everyone has their shit moments.
Yeah.
Why is no one sharing it? And why is it that when someone's sharing it, it's that they're feeding a tramp on the side of the road to get likes? It makes no sense.
I couldn't agree.
Long story short, Liv disabled her Instagram for a year to cope.
You've hit the nail on the head. You've hit the nail on, and we're all guilty of it. We've all done it, haven't we? Where we've put on the really positive thing, because not necessarily because we want the attention of, you know, something's really, we've done something good, so I want people to acknowledge that I've done it good. I think it's a sounding board. Social media has turned more into a sounding board than I think what it was ever designed for in the first place.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right, and I think your senses become overly heightened anyway when you're in a position of whether it's baby loss, it could be. Yeah. You know, we were talking about cancer earlier, or whatever it may be. Your senses are heightened anyway. I always remember when we lost Lily, we'd go shopping and all you'd see is pregnant women.
Yeah.
And I don't for one minute think that if there's anything up there that he decided or she decided or they decided at that time of the day they were going to put more pregnant women in there.
Yeah.
I just think it's because your senses are heightened.
You're just attuned to it.
You just
you watch films about it, don't you?
Yeah.
In the film, someone has a loss, and then all they notice is they've broken up with someone, notice is couples after that, right?
They
notice is that they're walking around having fun with a child, and you've lost your child.
It's right there at the forefront. Yeah.
You know, you say it's whatever.
Even subconsciously, it's there. I mean, the mild version. We've mentioned it many times, isn't it? You never notice red lights when you're not running late.
Yeah.
But you might be sat at as many as you would have done if you are running late, and then you start swearing at them all because it's like, this is my ninth one in 400 metres.
Yeah.
You mentioned to Liv came off Instagram for a year.
Something like that, yeah.
How about yourself?
Occasions. No, I just, I think being a bloke and having majority probably blokes on Instagram as opposed, I would more comfortably just swipe past it. I wouldn't go on there, but I'd just swipe past it. Liv showed me a reel on one of the nights, and she was just like, look at this. And she scrolled. And your algorithm probably fucked with it.
No, that's fine.
But she scrolled, and it was just baby, 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 baby. And I was like, I can't want my watching Austin Powers. Like, I can't do, like, I just stop it. Just disable your Instagram.
Yeah.
And she did.
You're right, though, about the algorithms as well. And I'm convinced the phones listen to us.
Even if you're just Googling, it might, it's on your device.
In fact, we did it as a bit of a joke, actually. We talked about something which was completely...
And then it came up.
And it came up. Yeah. It came up as an advert on Facebook. I think it was Facebook. And it came up. I'm convinced our phones listen to us. But you're absolutely right.
Oh, yeah, they do.
That.
Yeah.
Well, Liv would be shopping for stuff, right, for a newborn baby. And you try not to do it too early, but you need to be prepared. She was shopping for stuff. And then after we had... I can't remember if it was miscarriage one or number one or number two or whatever. But afterwards, because of her cookies, all that was popping up on her adverts was baby stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I don't need this anymore at the moment and I don't want to see it, but it's still going to show it to me. I'm looking for a new PC and I'm looking to, again, geeking out, looking to buy a new PC. I looked at one component today that happened to pop up on my Instagram because it's Black Friday and Amazon popped up. Looked at one component and then I swiped through the rest of my Instagram and it was littered with PCs.
It freaks you out when you first see it, isn't it, as well? This is why it's a bit strange because, as Ryan said, maybe they listen. I'm not sure, but I think because of, as a bold man, mentioned the word bold, you know, a few times, you know, maybe across the course of a week. I have never Googled boldness cures because I don't care. I'm quite happy with it and I don't want to have hair. But the amount of times I log on, it's like, oh, come and have a hair tattoo or come and get a wig or like all the options that are now available. I'm like, how is this appearing?
Yeah.
And I yelled at my phone, I don't fucking want it. But it's so strange how that happens.
Yeah.
Frustrating.
They still do. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what, after this conversation, what all shows up on our...
It'd be funny, actually.
On our phones now.
I think it's interesting what you said about, like, putting your best life on social media and stuff like that. And I've been through plenty of periods in my time where Crystal has had to remind me, like... Because I went through a real bad period of, like, oh, their life's brilliant. Mm. It's like, my life's, like, shit and stuff. And it's like, not even shit, but... Exaggeration to a point, but they've got this and they've got that and they've got the other. But then Crystal's like, yeah, they might have like the newest BMW, but how much debt are they in to pay for that BMW
and how much are they trying to compensate by posting about it every day?
Right. And I when we lost Callie, I blogged. I've always been very aware of what I put on my Facebook and I will put when I'm feeling shit. Mm. And I won't do it for any kind of sympathy. I'll do it because people need to have the validation around the fact that it's okay to share if you are struggling or you have vulnerabilities or you have weaknesses.
Yeah.
Right? And like we've said before many times on this podcast, if you don't want to see it,
scroll past.
There's the block button. Press the block button. You don't have to fucking see it. Excuse my language, but it's true. I keep saying that tonight after. We don't normally say that, do we? Anyway.
This might have been torn off for swearing, hasn't it?
No, have I missed
this conversation?
I'll tell you after. it's true. And I, you know, I put something on the dad's group yesterday about the one that came up on talking, you know, make sure you open up when you talk. And I don't put it to like I said, to get any kind of, all the likes that go onto that picture. I'm doing it because I mean it, because we have to. Mm. Because if we don't, people get into trouble and they don't talk. And like, you put it online, then people are like, you know what, I was feeling like that.
How are you feeling, Andy?
All good. Yeah, all good. I feel so scatterbrained. I don't even know what I've talked about.
I think, like I said already, that the real thing to come out of it tonight for me is that subject of miscarriage. Honestly, I mean, I think you've really just you've pushed it forward to talk about, and it sounds like a really weird thing to say, but it's true. You sound quite proud talking about, like, one of the worst things that's happened to you. Mm. You are now quite proud to push that out when you want to and you can.
It's important to talk about.
It's like a passion for
me.
Don't get
me wrong, I was really well supported by, especially like my gaming lot and my work and my family and, you know, my work, my boss and my boss's boss. I'm sure they won't mind me talking about it, but they, without going into too much detail, they went through similar and worse, if it's fair to refer to it like that. And they were fantastic. They were so supportive. Yeah. Throughout the whole process of struggling to work. And I was very lucky. I know not everyone gets that. Not everyone understands. You need to come back in as soon as possible. Nothing like that.
Did you have much time off?
and we were working from home as well, so it's very different.
It was still lockdown, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was COVID. So we were working from home. It was a very different environment. So I was much more comfortable to work whilst being at home, but I couldn't concentrate for very long. So I'd had a very open relationship with my boss, and I still do when I was struggling with my mental health. And he was always there. He was always so supportive. Brilliant. And fantastic. He's such a brilliant guy. I think comes back to the Matt's point about pride. What I really struggle with now is leaving things alone. So when it comes to mental health, if I feel like someone's really affected by something and I feel like they might need support, I feel compelled to just nudge a little bit.
Mm.
Not to ram it down their throats that I can help, I'm your saviour, you know, nothing like that.
To make them wary?
Just to make sure they're okay.
That's brilliant of you. Because you don't have to do that.
Yeah, but sometimes you feel like a twat because you're just like, I'm dealing with it, leave me alone. You know, everyone deals with it a different
way. But you could not then bother with the next person and they could be really struggling, they could need it. So,
and Liv's had the same thing. Liv was on social media. She really took a proactive approach of not, again, ramming it down people's throats, sharing the journey. She said lots of images of the scans that we had and the process. You hear a really nice few paragraphs about what we'd been through over the past few years and videos and all the rest of it, and basically saying, look, we've been through this. If you want to talk about it, we're here. You know, if you just want to share your experience or want us to share our experience, we're here. And Liv's had some people come back to her on Facebook and Instagram and said, look, I'm going through this. What did you do? I'm going through this. What did you do? And it's just fantastic. And family as well. I was so lucky to have such a...
Got that network.
I've just been really lucky throughout the whole process. And I don't take that for granted. I know not everyone
Yeah, well, it's good you're not ramming it down people's throats. You're making them aware that they have the option to come to you if they need to.
Well, sometimes that's all you need, right? I went through it and this is the support brilliant. That I had. Not I went through it is common because that drove us mad.
Right.
But I went through it. This is the support that we had. If you want right? Because I know there were people that went through it and they didn't have any kind of mechanism to cope, like Lily May, and they really struggled.
Yeah. So, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Still Parents podcast. You've spoke phenomenally well.
Absolutely.
And if there's any a time that you want to join us again, you're always welcome. It doesn't have to be for a whole episode. You can just drop in on someone else's episode. I still think we're going to try. I think it's impossible to try and get all of our guests. Remember during lockdown, wasn't it? We used to see all the Zooms, and it's like, especially the football, it's like just a row. Yeah. See if we can get as many of our previous guests on.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll be absolute chaos and possibly the most dreadful episode, but you know, it's got to be worth
it. It's an interesting idea.
To get it done. Thank you very much for joining us. All the details for our socials, our website, I would say, and the previous episode that Andy's done. And if you do have a moment, we know how busy you are, but we wouldn't mind a quick review. If you've got a spare 20, 30 seconds, we'd massively, massively appreciate that. Andy, once again, thank you so much for coming on. And send our regards to Liv. She was absolutely amazing at the boxing. And the link for that episode is in here too. We will be back with our next episode on the Still Parents podcast very, very soon. Until then, take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, guys.
See you, guys.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.